Welcome to the LarryNFishers.com podcast. I'm Larry Lynn. As a wealthy suburban area, Hamilton County, Indiana, does have some problems. Lots of open jobs and fewer people nearby to fill those positions. There is a nonprofit group in Noblesville dealing with the affordable housing issue in Hamilton County. I talked with two people with that nonprofit group during the afternoon of Monday, October 2nd. I'm in Noblesville, near downtown Noblesville, and I'm here with Jennifer Miller. Jennifer is the Executive Director for the Hamilton County Area Neighborhood Development Group, better known as HAND, H-A-N-D. And I'm also with Andrea Davis, the Outreach Coordinator for HAND. Andrea has been on our podcast before. It's the first time for Jennifer. I want to welcome both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And we're going to talk about housing today. And I've thought about doing a program on housing, but felt like I really needed to know more about it. So Andrea, you and Andrea were kind enough to invite me to a conference that was held recently, so I can at least ask some intelligent questions about the subject, I hope. Hamilton County, particularly the southern part of the county, but you could probably include Noblesville in that, is becoming very suburban, and housing costs can be very high. So I'll ask Jennifer to start. Explain how your organization deals with the affordability of housing in a suburban area like we see in Hamilton County.
So HAND's mission is to build community throughout Hamilton County. And one of the ways we achieve that is through the development of rental properties. We have six rental properties in Hamilton County. They're primarily located in Noblesville, Sheridan, Cicero. And then we have a new development coming online in Home Place next year.
Which is near Carmel.
Near Carmel, yes. So what we do is through our different funding sources, we actually are able to offer rents at below market rates or at affordable rates for our residents. There's a lot of restrictions with accepting those of funds. They're typically grants through the state or through the Federal Home Loan Bank of Indianapolis. And they restrict not only the incomes that we can set, but also the age groups that we can serve. And a lot of that is in the form of a commitment we make through the grant application. Most of our developments, as I said, we have six. Most of our developments are for those who are 55 and older. We have about 14 units that are non-age restricted, and those are located here in downtown Noblesville.
Okay. Anything you want to add, Andrea?
I don't think so. I mean, I think Jennifer explained it very well, sort of the technical aspects of what we do, but kind of more broadly, we're basically working to try to ensure that as the county grows and with it, housing and the cost of living rises, it can remain livable and affordable for folks who have lived here for a long time, seniors in particular, and also for the workers who are staffing the businesses that are contributing to Hamilton County's growth.
Well, one thing I learned, and I knew this in general, and I didn't see the statistics until I was at your conference, at least the latest ones, how low unemployment is in Hamilton County and places like Fishers within the county. We have a lot of businesses opening in and around Fishers, and that's expected to continue. It's going to require people to work at these businesses. It may not be able to afford the housing in the city where they work. So I guess my next question asks how an organization such as HAND can become a player in an issue like that.
Well, I think one of the connections that needs to be made is that, we do have employers who are looking for employees to fill low-wage positions, just at exit 205 along I-69 and 116th Street. There's about 1,000 jobs, according to the IBJ, that are coming to that area. We do not have affordable housing in Hamilton County. When your average sales price in Hamilton County is at $308,000, it's impossible for someone who's making minimum wage or even just a little bit more than minimum wage to be able to afford housing here. That also gets into the argument of public transit and our lack of public transit here in Hamilton County. We've become very dependent on other communities housing the people that we employ here in Hamilton County.
Yeah, I want to talk about transportation in a moment. Talk a little bit, Andre, about this unemployment issue. So low, so many jobs, but so difficult to fill them.
Right. I mean, I think I've heard Jennifer say that 3% unemployment is considered full employment. So a community that has 3% unemployment essentially has everyone in the community who wants to work is employed already. So, you know, obviously that means when you're adding 1,000 jobs in a mile square area, those people have to come from somewhere. If everyone in the community already has a job, most likely they're going to be coming from other communities where it's a little bit cheaper to live. And at some point, you have to wonder, how long will it take those folks who are driving in from Anderson or Indianapolis or Kokomo, you know, how many $10 an hour jobs are they going to drive past on the way to their $10 an hour job before they decide, you know what, maybe I should take the one that's closer to my house and save that gas money.
Yeah, it's interesting. Joe Donnelly, our senator, accepted an award from the Chamber of Commerce. National Chamber of Commerce accepted it in Fishers a few weeks ago. And when he got up to speak, one of the first things he talked about was how Fishers was having a positive impact on Anderson. You mentioned Anderson.
Absolutely. That
a lot of people are looking for work in Anderson ever since GM left town, and it's been a kind of a tough go for them economically. And he was amazed at the number of people who commute from Anderson to Fishers just to work. And that certainly gets to what you're talking about. I want to give you another statistic that I picked up at your conference, that if you want to rent a market rate apartment, that's an apartment out on the open market, a private developer develops the apartment complex, in order to afford an apartment in Fishers, you need to make $20 to $30 an hour. Translate that to annual, it's in the area of $41,000 to $62,000 a year. Now, there are a lot of jobs being created, as you already mentioned, and near Exit 205. IKEA is opening in a number of days from when we record this. And we've got Topgolf opening, and there's this big plan for the yard development, a lot of restaurants, and we're going to have, you know, restaurant jobs available. I think that's part of that 1,000 projection that we have. So let me ask Jennifer to talk about how that is going to be a challenge for the city of Fishers.
Well, I think it's a challenge not only for the city of Fishers, but all of Hamilton County. The National Low Income Housing Coalition did a study earlier this year that I found to be extremely fascinating. It indicated that the average worker is going to have to work 2.3 minimum wage full-time jobs, so that translates to approximately 92 hours a week to be able to afford a two-bedroom apartment in Hamilton County. Mm. That's a really disturbing statistic.
That is, yes. Anything you want to add to that, Andrea?
Well, I think, you know, Hamilton County is very proud of the growth that it has seen in the last couple decades. You know, it's really one of the fastest growing counties in the state, if not the country, and Fishers was just named one of the, you know, the best place to live by Money Magazine. But the reality is, the more difficult it is for employers to fill these jobs, the slower that growth is going to be going forward. You know, I think we've been very lucky to this point as we've had people moving into the county, you know, kind of matching the pace of business growth. But as businesses continue to grow, at the same time that the cost of living here is going up, that disconnect simply has to be addressed, or our sort of collective prosperity is going to be in danger.
Let me talk about mass transit, because you mentioned the lack of mass transportation. We were spoiled for just a few years when there was massive road construction between here and Indianapolis, and there were some subsidized bus service. There was some subsidized bus service available for people for a while. And then it was cut back to where it had to make a profit. Well, that didn't last very long because it's not particularly profitable to do that sort of thing. So I'm going to ask Andre to start this one. Mass transit, the lack of mass transit to take, for instance, people who may be able to work in Indianapolis to Fishers, for example, or other places in the county. How does that impact the housing situation here?
Well, I think housing and transit are almost inseparable when you're talking about the workforce, because unless you're working at a hotel where you also live, you know, you need to get from your house to your place of employment. And so in a county like Hamilton, where we don't have workforce housing, we don't have an abundance of housing that folks earning, you know, service workers, teachers, bus drivers, daycare workers, the folks we need in our community to make it function, if they can't afford to live in our community, then they have to get here, right? And if we don't have transit, and they have to travel to our community without transit, then they have to earn enough money to live wherever they live and have a reliable automobile that they can use to get to their place of employment. I think if you talk to a lot of employers, you'll hear, yeah, we have great luck finding workers, but as soon as their car breaks down, you know, it's a no-call, no-show, we have to let them go. And it's great that employers have high standards, but you have to factor in the housing situation and the transit situation. If they're not living near work, you have to allow, you know, you have to consider the difficulty of getting to work if we don't have transit. Somebody, I think our keynote speaker at the conference actually talked about, you were there, mm-hmm, for the keynote.
Sure.
And I don't have the exact anecdote, but she was at a gathering and they were talking about transit and housing, and the guy's takeaway was, man, this traffic is terrible. You guys need to do something about the traffic. But the reality was the problem was housing, that his workers couldn't get to work because of a lack of transit, but he considered that a traffic problem as opposed to a, mm-hmm,
Well, it is a traffic problem, but it's more than that.
Right.
And Jennifer, let me put it to you this way. For years, we thought that nickel plate line was going to give us mass transit. Looks like that's not going to happen now. And if you talk to the mayor of Fisher, Scott Fadness, it's his view that in the very near future, faster than we think, technology is going to solve all this, and that people are going to be moving around in much different ways. So with that in mind, do we have a short-term issue here?
No, I think that affordable housing and transit are both things that we should have been addressing 5 to 10 years, mm-hmm, ago to meet the needs of today. As Andrea was talking, I kept thinking of the anecdote. You can increase the capacity of a road, but that's not going to ease congestion. You have to increase the capacity of how people are traveling on those roads. So we need to add more resources that allow more people to travel in a smaller space to be able to ensure that they can get to their work, to that they can get home at the end of the day, and then they can get to the different amenities that they need in the county.
Yes. So what I'm hearing from the two of you is that we have a transportation problem, but we have a housing problem and a transportation problem, but it's hard to separate them unless we look at both of them, is what I'm hearing.
It absolutely is. When you start to factor in the cost that that most households are paying for both, not only their housing expenses, but also their transportation expenses. And this is a really scary number, but 98% of households in Hamilton County are cost burdened when you factor in both transportation and housing costs. And that's just not, I mean, that's how people live. It's not something that you can't separate the two and address only the two options. You have to address these two issues simultaneously, and I think only then can you be successful in addressing Hamilton County's problem of a lack of people, right? Because that's why we have all of these job openings. We don't have enough of the resource they need to be able to fill those jobs.
Another thing that came up at your conference is the fact that there's more apartments are needed in a suburban area that people can't afford. But every time you try and push a subsidize of any kind, apartment complex or some kind of work like that, we get to the old NIMBY problem. And if people who don't know what that means, that's not in my backyard. But you also introduced some new acronyms I hadn't heard before. One of them was NOTE, not over there either. But the best one was BANANA, build absolutely nothing anywhere near anything. I don't think that gets you anywhere if you do that. So my question here is how do you answer the people in a neighborhood that do not want any apartments. They don't want market rate apartments. They don't want subsidized apartments. They don't want any apartments. I have run across this argument in Fishers many times. Jennifer, would you start talking about that? What's your view on that?
Well, apartments are a good way to capture a large density of people around a node, whether that be a shopping node or a transportation node. It's something that goes hand in hand when you start talking about transit-oriented design. You typically have a large concentration of people close to those transportation options. And it's because the cost of that property necessitates a higher density of people living there for the developer. But it also means that you're able to include things like grocery stores, like restaurants. Those things all create jobs. They're amenities for the people who live in the neighborhood. Those people can walk to those amenities. It typically generates a sense of place. We can get into a whole conversation about placemaking and how apartments contribute to that, because there's a large concentration of diverse people living in an area. Do I think apartments are the right thing or the right type of development in every location? No, but I think there is a place for them, and we should be more open to considering them. One of the things you mentioned as far as NIMBYism, and I think this is probably one of the things that this is the biggest hurdle that affordable housing has, is people envision the public housing projects of the 1960s and 1970s. And that's just not what affordable housing is anymore. Our product specifically is built with typically a fiberboard cement siding in combination with brick. We meet a lot of the development standards that typical residential development builders have to meet as well. We work very hard to make sure that our residents have the benefits of ENERGY STAR appliances, LED lighting, those kinds of things to help keep their utility costs down, so that doesn't then contribute to their burden of housing cost. So I think there's a when we're talking about getting over the hurdles of NIMBYism and NOTE and banana, it's a lot of it is getting over this image of what public housing or affordable housing used to be. It's not that anymore.
Yeah. Andre, I want you to answer this, because what struck me is that public housing today is, I mean, there's that vision that Jennifer talked about very poor people, unable to find work, needing a place to live, and that was the old model for public housing. But yet with the kind of housing you're talking about, we're talking about people who work and work long hours and have jobs. I just can't afford market value or market rate apartment living. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the misperceptions that we have to battle as we try to introduce, you know, sort of more accessible housing into communities that really have just gone crazy price-wise. And I just have to take a quick break to give proper credit for the NOTE and banana acronyms. That yeah. Those actually came from last year's conference. Okay. One of our speakers, Bruce Cordingley, who's the head of PEDCOR in Carmel, they develop affordable housing across the country, and these are acronyms they came up with in their experience trying to get these developments approved in other communities. But it certainly is a challenge. You know, there's a perception, not only, you know, that they look and that they're full of people who don't work and they look like Caprini Green in Chicago, but, you know, they're going to impact my property values. My property values are going to go down if you put this in near me. Crime and bad elements are going to follow these developments, you know, sort of just because they're there. And I think, you know, one of the things we do as a small nonprofit developer, you know, we're not trying to make a fortune on these. We're not building 400 unit apartment buildings, although, you know, that scale would be nice. You know, it's, you know, it's not what we do. You know, we build small, thoughtful developments that try to integrate into the neighborhood where they are. Our tenants are all pre-qualified. They go through intense, you know, background checks, the income verification, you know, as Jennifer mentioned, many of our tenants are seniors. Some of them aren't currently working. They've achieved, you know, my personal goal in life, which is retirement. But all of them, you know, some of them may be existing purely on Social Security or other kind of, you know, benefit programs like that, that if you're making $1,000, $1,200 a month, that's all you're getting. You can't afford a $1,500 a month apartment. I mean, that may seem obvious, but that's what's being constructed in Hamilton County. And here are these people who have lived here their entire lives. You know, why don't they deserve to stay in the community where they've worked? You know, we also, in our, like Jennifer said, we have 14 apartments that aren't age restricted. And those are, you know, for the vast majority of those occupied by people who work, who are out there trying to make a living every day and just can't get ahead if they're paying market rates. And so all we can really do to counter that NIMBY and note and banana is to, you know, kind of show the facts as opposed to the perceptions. There have been lots of studies to show that property values aren't negatively affected when a thoughtful, well-managed development is nearby. The problem is there are developments that are slapped together by bad developers that aren't, you know, cognizant of the area they're in, that aren't properly managed once they're built. And if you're allowing, you know, they kind of give the rest of us a bad name, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's a nice goal to have, retirement. You know, I've been there for a few years, but people call me the busiest retired person.
I was going to say, you work harder than I do.
So but you can do what you want to do. It's a labor of love. I want to piggyback on what Andrea had just said, because you had a speaker at that conference I attended recently that was held in Fishers at Conner Prairie. Rhonda Shrewsbury Waybright was a speaker. She's president and owner of Real America, which is a Fishers company. And she provided a number of examples of low-cost housing projects her company constructed, faced all those NIMBY, banana, note issues, and said once they were constructed, because they do take good care and they don't tend to build them and sell them, as a lot of private hedge funds like to do to make a quick profit, the neighbors get very surprised when they find out it is well-maintained, and the people who live there tend to be a very stable group of people. So with that argument that she made, what do you take away from that, Jennifer, that speech that she gave?
Oh, I think she was right on point. We have faced similar criticism with one development in particular that comes to mind. There was a lot of pushback from the immediate neighbors. The development went in. It's, in my opinion, one of our most beautiful developments. And when you go by it, it looks, to me, it looks better than some of the nearby market rate units. But what's wonderful now is that those same residents who had voiced their concerns about who would be moving in there and actively remonstrated against the project now have relatives living in that project. Or that development. And so I think that really resonates with me as far as how we are able to change the perception. Unfortunately, it's just in that little node. If we could expand that to Hamilton County, we would have a much easier path in making sure that there was more housing options for more Hamilton County residents sooner.
Anything you'd like to add, Andrea?
No, I testify to what Jennifer said. I mean,
you were nodding the whole time.
Yeah, so. I mean, I was thinking of the same. I know exactly the development that Jennifer's thinking about. And, it, you know, if we could replicate that experience or that anecdote around the county, I think, you know, these perception issues would go away. But the reality is, you know, funding is very hard to come by for these projects, especially as a nonprofit developer. You know, we don't have deep pockets which to build these things. So, you know, we can only do 10 units here, 10 units there, you know, hopefully 50 units somewhere else. And so it takes time to sort of educate a county of 300,000 people when you're doing it, you know, 20 people at a time.
One issue that came up at the conference also was the low-income housing credit, which allows a tax credit for these units to be built. And now we're starting to see tax reform being discussed in Washington. Are you folks watching that tax reform debate to see whether or not the low-income housing credit, which you depend on a great deal for these projects, are you watching that closely?
Absolutely. That's the way most investors offset their tax liability is by purchasing tax credits. And so, you know, case in point, we made our application for a development last fall in November. And at that point, the equity markets were pretty stable. It was before the election. We were getting a return on the dollar of about 104 or 106. So it looked...
Explain what that means.
So we would get a $1.04 for every dollar that was invested in the project.
Very good.
And so we were very optimistic as far as how that would play out down the line. Well, when the state made their announcements in the following February from our November application, just the election and a few tweets from our current president caused the equity markets to destabilize, and the return was about 86 cents on the dollar.
Oh my gosh. So, that alone can cause a change of that magnitude in the markets.
Just a rumor. That's all it took was a rumor that that was going to happen, and it changed the equity market. So the state, and I think they made a really good decision, they withheld tax credits to ensure that those projects that were awarded had the full funding that they needed. And a lot of those projects that were awarded tax credits in the initial round have actually applied for additional tax credits. We were put on a wait list. Our project that we had for downtown Noblesville, our development project, the Granary Elevator and Lofts, was number one on that wait list. And so we were not awarded tax credits. And at this point in time, we will not be able to move forward with a project on that site.
So that's dead at this point?
That Sadly. Particular project, yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
We do live in a political world, whether we like it or not, Andrea, and what happens in Washington and to some extent Indianapolis, although the state government, from what I've seen, seems to be supportive of these programs. Washington makes all the decisions, don't they?
Absolutely. There are some big question marks out there. You know, the current administration has put some really long-standing, successful programs in question. You know, the Community Development Block Grant Program, which I know I've been writing about. Well, I'm a former reporter, recovering journalist, as I like to say, and I, you know, for more than 20 years wrote about CDBG grants and the good work they could do in communities, both to help with affordable housing and also things like sidewalks and ADA compliance and that sort of thing, and to contemplate the idea of CDBG completely being done away with is kind of amazing to me. But the reason we can do what we do is because of programs like that. You know, construction costs aren't different for us because we're a nonprofit. No one comes to us and says, "Hey, I know you guys aren't going to get rich on this project, so a construction project that would cost $100,000, we're going to do for you for $50,000. I mean, we have to pay the same amount that everyone else pays, and the way we're able to lower what we charge our tenants in rent is by funding those projects through programs like CDBG and HOME and Affordable Housing Program and other, you know, kind of state and national programs that allow us to do what we do. So, you know, if they go away, that would completely rock the world of affordable housing development.
Well, I have been a recovering reporter for 30 years. I'm still recovering. Give you each a chance to maybe mention something here. Describe some of your successful projects here in Hamilton County. Talk about some of those.
Well, rather than talk about a project, I think it's really important to talk about the people who are in our developments. That's who we do this work for.
That's why we do it, sure.
We have one resident who shared with me that she was so thankful to be able to get into one of our developments, into a unit in one of our developments, because she had been living in a converted motel and her kitchen was a hot plate. She didn't want to have family over. She didn't want to have friends over. And by moving into one of our units in one of our developments, it not only gave her a full kitchen, But it also gave her comfort in inviting friends and family over because she was in safe housing. And that was just to invite guests over. So
I think the word is dignity, isn't it?
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a sense of security. It's a sense of safety. It's dignity. You know, these are people who worked hard in our community. And they deserve a fair shot at housing.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with Jennifer. You know, the reason we do what we do really is the people. And I welcome the opportunities that we get, however limited they are, to go out and, you know, hang out with our residents. Our development in Sheridan is our only one we're able to add a kind of community room, a clubhouse to. And so that gives us a venue to go and talk with folks. And I go there as often as I can break away from the office to play euchre or bingo or whatever, and just talk to folks about the difference that this, you know, having this opportunity makes in their lives. And, you know, you hear things about, from a woman, you know, oh, you know, her son is successful and well off and has plenty of room for her to live with him, but it goes back to dignity. You know, she doesn't want to live with her son. She doesn't want to be dependent on another human being. She wants to live independently and be able to, you know, cook when she wants and sleep when she wants and get up when she wants. And that's the opportunity that we're giving seniors. And I think, you know, as we continue to do what we do, we're sort of pivoting a little bit to focus on the workforce housing a little bit and, you know, families. That's the heartbreaking part of our job is when we get calls from folks who say, you know, I'm a single mom with two kids and I'm staying with my parents and I just can't take it anymore. I need my own place. What can you do to help me? Well, right now there's not much we can do to help. We have more than 200 names on a waiting list. We have 14 apartments that a single mother of two school-age children would qualify to live in. I'm not sure, and they're all one-bedroom apartments, so I'm not sure with the state's new occupancy laws if they would qualify to live in our one-bedroom apartment. So there's so much more. You know, it's reassuring to talk to the folks that we do help, but it also makes me very aware of how much more we could do if we have the opportunity.
Yeah, and I remember doing a podcast with the Youth Assistance Program, Tricia Strauss, who handles that program in Fishers. And she goes, when you're dealing with youth that have issues, you're dealing with family, and so often housing is at the center of it because if the family's having a struggle, keeping that child in the same school system with their friends and the environment they're accustomed to is difficult, if not impossible. You had something to say there, Jennifer.
I did. I was just going to say, likewise, you have the college students who return home. Not every single one of them wants to move back in with mom and dad after they've lived independently for several years.
And mom and dad probably don't want them, to be honest.
So
hey, my daughters are out of the house. That's all right.
Just by providing housing options that we can welcome recent college grads back to the community so they can live and contribute to the communities that they grew up in is beneficial as well. I think it helps us diversify as a county.
Our time's about up. Anything you would like to add that we didn't talk about, Andrea? She's thinking. I'll let you think. How about you, Jennifer?
Well, I think HAND plays a huge role in providing housing options and housing choices in Hamilton County. As Andrea said, we're looking to pivot our focus, we're not focused just on seniors, but also on that workforce development component. We've got some really good arguments. You know, the IBJ had a couple articles recently talking about the unemployment rate. We touched on it briefly earlier. I think that's where we can really find our footing and show Hamilton County residents just how important housing choices are in Hamilton County.
Andrea, any parting shots?
Well, we hear a lot about Hamilton County being a great place to live, work, and play. And up to this point, I think we've been able to fulfill that. But as we continue to grow, the living part is going to be a lot harder if we don't change something. So that's why we're here.
My thanks to Jennifer Miller, the Executive Director for Hamilton County Area Neighborhood Development, short for HAND for short, and Andrea Davis, the Outreach Coordinator for HAND. Ladies, thank you so much for being with me.
Thanks,
Larry. Thank you.
My thanks to Jennifer Miller and Andrea Davis.
for educating us on the housing issues facing Hamilton County. If you enjoy movies, try listening to the podcast Hamilton County Goes to the Movies. A new podcast is posted each Saturday. It is hosted by myself and Adam Austin. We review at least one film in the theaters and welcome a local guest. Find all the podcasts at LarryNFishers.com. Go near the top of the homepage and click the link Podcast, Hamilton County Goes to the Movies. This is the Larry and Fishers Podcast. My name is Larry Lannon. I write the LarryandFishers.com local news blog from Fishers, Indiana, the suburban community northeast of Indianapolis. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again.